at 1617 South Beverly Glen Boulevard, apartment 304, Los Angeles 90024. My telephone number is area code 213-470-5840. And this is Thursday, October 22nd, 26th. And to conserve time and effort, this is a note or letter to Thomas H. Murphy, Wisconsin alumni in Madison, Wisconsin, regarding a biographical sketch of me that apparently has been lost. Frankly, I'm using this tape in the hope that somebody can transpose the pertinent parts of it for your records. And to be quite honest, I do recall vaguely there was some sort of form I think I filled out, the one which has apparently been lost, but I cannot remember the questions on it or the material required. So taking the phrase biographical material at its face value, I will attempt to, as briefly as possible, put in this tape what I consider my biography to date. As your records will reveal, I was born and brought up in Milwaukee, graduated in Shorewood High School, and entered the University of Wisconsin. And I am the class of 1939. I was a Sigma Nu, lived at 625 North Henry Street, and I got a BA in majoring in English, as I recall. I also worked on the Daily Cardinal with great pleasure. I recall that the original questionnaire asked if I had any relatives or so forth connected with the university, and the fact is I do. My father is James D. Shaw. D is in Denver. He's deceased about 10, 15 years and left a sizable amount of money for scholarships to the university, including the law school. When I graduated from law school, I went to New York and got a job with NBC in the publicity department, and I was there in publicity only a few months, and at night I created my first daytime serial. It was called Front Page Farrell, F-A-R-R-E-L-L, starring an unknown young actor named Richard Widmark, and I submitted it to Air Features, which was presided over by a woman named Ann Hummert, who had six or seven of these things on the air, and she bought mine. I think one reason she bought it is, in order to write it, what I did is I went downstairs in the NBC basement and I got in the files, and I got five or six copies of every show she'd ever written or produced, and studied them and wrote one very much like them, which is something I still believe in, still teaching my students at UCLA, where incidentally I'm teaching now, which is when you're getting started, don't deviate from, in other words, the oldest cliche in the world, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So anyway, I got my first serial, and then I went on into other serials, and finally I sold a show called Mr. District Attorney, which I had created as a summer replacement for Bob Hope, and to be sponsored by Bristol-Myers. We were going to be on the air 13 weeks. Actually, we were on 14 years. And 52 weeks a year, and in all of those 14 years, we were never out of the top 10, and I wrote all of them. some 830 scripts, as I recall. I then became a partner of a celebrated actor named Robert Montgomery, and we created a one-hour-at-night lifetime show called Robert Montgomery Presents, and I wrote about half of them and edited the other half, and we were on for two or three very successful years. And then, as most people recall, the studios in Hollywood, which up to this time had been very much against TV, decided if you can't beat them, join them. And so TV almost overnight switched from New York City to California, which only makes sense because the vast studios and spaces out here and equipment is so much better than New York. So it became really a matter of move to California or get into another business, because television dropped dead in New York City. So I came to California, and I got an agent, and without much trouble, because by that time I had some reputation. And I think my first job, as I recall, was Zorro, which was produced by Walt Disney. I had no interest in Zorro whatsoever. I'm not that kind of writer, and I don't write swashbuckling kind of things. But like so many others from the East, I was so eager to get established in the West Coast that I took anything that came along. I went from Zorro to something equally horrendous called Highway Patrol, starring Brad Crawford. And I wrote, maybe 15 or 20 of those. And finally, I sold a nighttime show of my own called Hawaiian Eye. And I sold that to Warner Brothers, and it was starring Bob Conrad and Connie Stevens. And Warner Brothers at that time had 8 hours on ABC at night, and this was one of them. I moved on to the lot, and we were extremely successful, very high ratings. And we went to Honolulu frequently to film it. And it was not only fun, I thoroughly enjoyed writing it. And we didn't take ourselves very seriously in those days at Warner Brothers. I was the only writer on the lot because I was contracted by the year. And I had the studio sign department paint a plaque for my door which said Studio Chaplain. I got all kinds of strange people coming in and out, and that made my day. I can't remember precisely how many years we stayed on the air, but it was a success. And now, if you don't mind an interruption, I've just stopped and gone back and listened to what I've dictated so far, and I find I made one rather serious error. I did not graduate from law school. I entered it only because my father was a lawyer and I was expected to go into his office, but I wasn't happy in law school. In fact, I was no good at it, and I dropped out and went to New York and got into television and radio. I think parenthetically, it might be worth remarking that when I look back at my days at the University of Wisconsin, two men of considerable importance and reputation were influential, so far as I was concerned, and helpful to me. One was, I did my undergraduate thesis on American black poets under Wallace Stegner, who at that time was in the English department and, as most people know, is a very distinguished writer now. And he was wonderfully helpful to me and inspiring to me. The other man was the dean of the law school, Lloyd Garrison. And when it became apparent in my freshman year that I was not a very gifted law student, he called me in and asked me if I liked law, and I assured him I did, which of course I didn't. And then he said, did I tell him the truth? And I did. I told him that, no, I didn't like law, which I think he knew because I was then working on the Daily Cardinal, and he was reading my material and knew that I was interested in writing. And he said, are you afraid to tell your father you don't like law? And I said, yes. And he said, would you like me to tell him? And I, with great gratitude, said yes. I didn't even know he knew him. And he said, I've known him for many, many years, and I've testified for him many times. So he did. He wrote to him, and a few weeks later he called me back into his office, and he handed me a letter from my father to him saying that my father said, thank you for your interest in Robert, and at your convenience, call him in and explain that when the torch finally falls from my failing hands, I never expected him to catch it. And it was signed Jimmy Shaw. And then I read it and thanked him, and then Lloyd Garrison said, and here is another letter. And he handed me a letter on his own, University of Wisconsin Law School letterhead, written to the editor of the New York Times. And the letter was only one sentence, and it simply said, here is a bright boy I think you ought to meet. And I was on a plane the next morning, and I went to New York. Actually, I didn't get a job with the New York Times, but the New York Times editor who read the letter sent me to NBC, and that was my first job. That's all parenthetical. And now I'll try to go back to some semblance of chronological order. After I left Warner Brothers, I went back into daytime serials, which I've always done off and on. And the first one I went back to was called Love of Life. And I wrote that for 2 or 3 years. And it seems to me in my whole writing career, I have always returned to daytime serials, notably to Procter & Gamble serials. Procter & Gamble in those days had 8 daytime serials on the air, and I eventually became head writer of 7 of them. So I'm very familiar with the Procter & Gamble method, and there is a special method to Procter & Gamble, and I have always liked serials. Many people don't realize that the writer of a daytime serial is probably the highest paid writer in the business because he writes 52 weeks a year. When you write a nighttime show, such as I've done, you get a lot of money for your scripts, but you only write 8 or 10 or 12 of them a year. In daytime serials, you get a check every Friday. The same thing is true of some of the actors. They are much more highly paid than people realize. And furthermore, I enjoy writing serials, and I enjoy being head writer and dreaming up the stories. And it was from that experience that I was asked to develop or help develop a new serial called Peyton Place, based on the book by Grace Matedes. And so I spent 6 months at Fox, 20th Century Fox, developing Peyton Place, and I stayed on and I wrote the first 5 episodes, and I wrote maybe for 2 more years, perhaps another 50 or 60. It was an extraordinary experience because of the reputation of the book, we were convinced that we were going to be thrown off the air for being lewd and lascivious. Actually, it was about the most puritanical show I've ever written. The protagonist, the young boy, played by Ryan O'Neill, and his girlfriend was played by Mia Farrow. And in the whole first 4 years of the show, they never even kissed, yet people read into it what they had read into the novel and decided we were a wonderfully lusty, lascivious program, and we were, as I'm sure you remember, a tremendous hit. Paul Monash, who was the producer, and I were so unsure of our product that opening night we both went to Hawaii so we wouldn't have to be here and read the terrible reviews. And about noon in Hawaii, we got the news that we had become number one overnight on the Nielsen charts, and we stayed that way week in and week out for almost forever. Eventually, as is true of writing any serial, the writer, I think, is wise to get out because you begin repeating yourself. And so consequently, I left Peyton Place after about 3 or 4 years at the invitation of a man I respected and admired very much, Frank Glicksman. And we got together and dreamed up and produced a new show for Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer called Medical Center. And I wrote the pilot for that, and I stayed to become story editor and writer, and I wrote perhaps 20 of them and edited the rest and took part in story meetings. Medical Center, strangely enough, to make the world small, starred Chad Everett and Jim Daly. Jim Daly I had originally met as an actor in the Port Players in Port Washington, Wisconsin, way back when I was in high school. After Medical Center, I then went back into serials for a while, and I wrote a number of them for Procter & Gamble. Let me see, some of them was Search for Tomorrow, Another World, and that was kind of fun in those days because they were still produced in New York, but I lived out here, and Procter & Gamble paid my way to come back to New York every 2 or 3 months for a week of meetings. And Procter & Gamble likes to eat. They like to eat very well, so it was a very pleasant week. I stayed in the very best hotels in very large suites. I had a limousine at my disposal, and those were good and exciting days. I still have a great fondness for Procter & Gamble. Then I came back here and I wrote The Long Hot Summer as a nighttime series, and then probably one of the best breaks is I got an invitation to take part in the formation of a show called Dallas, and I did. I wrote a great deal of the preparation for Dallas, and I stayed with Dallas long enough to write about 10 or 12 episodes, and it was a very pleasant and good experience because the people connected with Dallas are unusually kind and good. Larry Hagman plays the notorious J.R. He's one of the finest actors I've ever met, and by that I just don't mean his talent as an actor, but his personality. He's the rock of that show. He keeps everybody happy and content and deserves every nickel he's making. And incidentally, he is now the highest paid actor of anyone in the entertainment business. He's making $175,000 per show, and he's also being paid as co-producer. Well, then after Dallas, I got an invitation from ABC. They were about to cancel a show called General Hospital, one of their serials, which had been running about 25 years and was petering out. And a woman named Gloria Monty and I were brought in and told that if we could revive it in 6 months, we could have a contract. And we looked at it, and Gloria told them that if she couldn't revive it in 3 months, they could have it. So she walked in the first day, and out of, say, 50 actors that had been doing it, She fired 35 of them in one day. And as is reflected now in most serials, brought in young people. And we changed the show around 180 degrees, and it became number one. I stayed with it 4 years, and it was never less than number one of all the serials on the air, and even today, it's number two. I left General Hospital last year, and at the moment, I am simply a consultant to ABC on its serials, and I'm not writing anyone at all, but I am teaching serial writing in the Extension Division at UCLA and enjoying that. And I've now taken about 6 months vacation, and I may extend it another few months, and then I think the itch is there, and I'll get back into writing something. I hope I've been able to provide some of the material you want or could find useful for the files. If I haven't, and if I've neglected anything, by all means call me or write me, and I'll try to fill in the rest. There are some shows I think I wrote that I've forgotten, probably mercifully, but I think I've included the ones that at least meant the most to me. Again, I am very grateful to you for being interested in me. And I have a great warm affection for my days at Madison. I think I was very lucky because I have seen other campuses now and other universities. And believe me, I went to one of the best. So thank you again, and let me know if this is at all satisfactory.